Starting here on the top of Ted Vov and Aleph, the Gemara is continuing to search for the position of Rabbi Yehuda, which in the Beit Medrash, they said the position of Rav was premised on. Rav had made a statement on our Mishnah, the Mishnah that said, Ashochet b'Shabbat v'yom ha-Kippurim, afal pi she-mitchayev b'nafsho, even though he will end up with the death penalty, nevertheless, shchitato k'sheira. On that, Rav commented that the shchitato k'sheira only permits one to eat it after the day has passed, after the day of Shabbat, after the day of Yom Kippurim. By Yom Kippurim, it's obvious, because there's an Isur Achila on Yom Kippur, so of course you can't eat it until the night. On Shabbat, it's not clear why he has to wait until night. In the Beit Midrash, they said that is because Rav is premising his opinion on the position of Rabbi Yehuda. The Gemara until now has been searching, Hi Rabbi Yehuda, which Rabbi Yehuda is Rav's position premised on? So we went through a number of iterations in yesterday's daf, and today's daf, we're going to finally come to the position of Rabbi Yehuda that explains Rav's position in our Mishnah. And that is three lines down on the top of Tat Vavun Aleph, El Amar Ravashi, Rabbi Yehuda Dimevashel, that the Rabbi Yehuda that upon which Rav's position is premised is the Rabbi Yehuda that we find by Bishul B'Shabbat. By Bishul B'Shabbat, we have a Mishnah that's none. In the Gemara in Shabbat, we have a Mishnah that has a three-way machloket when it comes to someone who violated Shabbat and cooked on Shabbat. So I'm a Vashel b'Shabbat b'shogeg, someone who cooks unintentionally on Shabbat, Yochal, may participate, may eat from that Bishul on Shabbat. And when we say may eat from it, this is both who, the person who did the violation, as well as anybody else, may partake of this food on Shabbat because there's shogeg. There was no violation here. There's no ma'aseh aveira. There was no actual veira committed over here. And so he made a mistake. If he made a mistake, we allow him to benefit from that mistake on Shabbat. And he's allowed to eat from the cooking that he did on Shabbat. On the other hand, b'mezid, if he did it intentionally, cooked intentionally, lo yochal. Then he may not participate or may not eat that food that it was cooked. Now over here, when we say lo yochal, doesn't mean forever. Lo yochal means on that Shabbat itself. He may not get benefit from the Masa Shabbat, the violation, the Aveira that he did on Shabbat, he may not get any personal benefit from that until after Shabbat. And we talk about after Shabbat, as Rashi points out, that's B'kadei She'asu. It's not just that you have to wait until the closing of Shabbat. You have to wait enough time after Shabbat that you could have done the same Malacha. And that's in order that you don't get any benefit from doing it on Shabbat itself. So if we delay you until after Shabbat, that's not enough, because you're still benefiting from the fact that you did on Shabbat, because now immediately after Shabbat you can get benefit. So there's a concept called B'kadei She'asu, the amount of time it takes you to complete the same halacha. So you have to wait after Shabbat, the amount of time it would take you to accomplish this same halacha. So the amount of time it took you to cook on Shabbat, that you'll have to wait after Shabbat, and then it becomes mutar. Mutar both to you and to others, meaning that the person who violated the Isur B'mezid, it's permissible to him, as well as others can participate or partake of this food after the Shabbat has completed and you have a time of Kadesh Yasu. So that's the position of Rabbi Meir. Position of Rabbi Meir, there is no differentiation between the violator and those others that benefit or participate in that food. The only distinction that we draw is between Shogeg. It's done unintentionally where there's no Maaseh Avera. Over there, we don't have any Knas. We don't have any punishment whatsoever, and you can benefit right away. On the other hand, by Mezid, where it's done intentionally, then we take away the benefit that was provided by him doing it intentionally on Shabbat. The benefit is that he could benefit from it, or use it, utilize it right away, or immediately after Shabbat. We take that away and say you can only benefit or utilize it after the Shabbat is complete, and the amount of time we take him to do it. That is the position, Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's the position, Rabbi Meir. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says, Bishogeg, when it comes to Shogeg, Yochal b'motzei Shabbat. When it comes to Shogeg, you have to wait until after Motzei Shabbat. Again, when we say B'motzei B'Shabbat and not Shabbat Atzmo, it means after Kadesh Yasu, the amount of time that it would take you to complete the same Malacha after Shabbat, so that you get no benefit from it. Again, no differentiation between the individual himself who violated the Avera, as well as the any other individual that we have here, whether it's the person who committed the Avera or someone else, they are both allowed to do this. That is because Rabbi Yehuda believes that in terms of Shogeg, there is a Maaseh Avera. Maaseh Avera means that you unintentionally did it, but you still did something that is otherwise asur on Shabbat. So because of that, we say don't get benefit from that on the Shabbat itself. So how do we prevent you from doing that? We say wait until after Shabbat. The amount of time Shogeg She'asu. So basically, as Tosfos points out, the Mezid of Rabbi Meir is equivalent to now what Rabbi Yehuda terms as the shogeg of Rabbi Yehuda. That means that we wait until afterwards, and that's because he's worried by shogeg. There is a masse avira, and since there's a masse avira, we want you to wait until afterwards, after Shabbat, after Kadesh Yasu, so you don't benefit from that masse avira. On the other hand, b'mezid, when it comes to mezid, Rabbi Yehuda believes that lo yuchal olamit. He may never benefit from it. So that is a knas that Chamim imposed on this individual. This individual who here did a masev ira on Shabbat, did something that was incorrect, not permissible on Shabbat, we say to him, you lose out. You may never benefit from this because you violated the Shabbat. On the other hand, when it comes to other individuals, acherim, over there we say they have to wait until after Shabbat, b'day shi'asu. So when it comes to others, they may partake, benefit from his cooking, as long as they don't benefit from the fact that he did it on Shabbat. So they have to wait till after Shabbat, k'day shi'asu. But for that individual himself who did it and violated the Shabbat, b'mezid, we say, knas, we fine him, we punish him by saying that he may never benefit from such an action. Now, Rabbi Yochanan Sandar, which is the third opinion here in the Mishnah, Omer b'shogeg yochal demotzei Shabbat l'acherim velodo. So again, as Tosu pointed out, the mezid of Rabbi Yehuda now becomes the shogeg of Rabbi Yochanan Sandar. And b'shogeg of Rabbi Yochanan Sandar is, first of all, this individual, gone forever. He may not partake in it whatsoever. And that is because he's kones shogeg atu mezid. Then not only is there a maise avira, but on top of that, we have a knas on him, that shogeg atu mezid. We're afraid that he'll come to do it intentionally. So when he does it unintentionally, we impose the same punishment on him. And that is the individual who violated the avira may not partake in it forever. Then we have a secondary statement, which is the acherim, others. Others, we don't have to worry about if someone does this malacha unintentionally that they're going to come to do it. That's not what we're worried about. So therefore, we say to them, don't get a benefit from the maaseh Shabbat, the avira that was done on Shabbat b'shogeg, so you can have benefit from it motzei Shabbat b'kdei shi'asu. That's the position in shogeg. But b'mezid, lo yochol olomit, lo lo, v'lo l'achemim. But when it comes to intentional violation of the Shabbat, Rabbi Yochanan Salander says, both for him, the individual who violated the Avir, as well as others, you cannot get any benefit from it. Now, Rabbi Yochanan Salander, his belief is different than Rabbi Yehuda. We saw before that Rabbi Yehuda differentiated between the individual who did the violation, where there's a reason for a knas, and others. That differentiation makes a lot of sense, and we see that Rabbi Yochanan Salander makes such a differentiation in Shogeg. So why by Mezid does he say everybody's Asur? That's Rabbi Yochanan Salander. It's explained in the Gemara in Baba Kama, as well as the Gemara in Shabbat, has an interesting or unusual opinion that Maaseh Shabbat becomes Asur. You can learn that from the Psukim, that Min HaTorah, Maaseh Shabbat, someone who violates the Shabbat, the Cheftza, the object on which this violation of the Shabbat was performed, becomes Asur Olamit, becomes permanently Asur, makes no difference whether it's the individual himself who did the Avera or anyone else, it's Asur the Gamre. So that's the Maaseh Shabbat over here, become Asurim Bechila, B'mezid, because he did it intentionally, since he has a Maaseh Avera, B'mezid, over there's a restriction against any benefit from the object. By Shogeg, again, there might be some form of a masse avira over there. But really, the ikar position of Rabbi Yochanan Salander is premised on shogeg atu mezid. And this din, midoraita, that he learns out of psukim, only applies by mezid, does not apply by shogeg. So now the Gemara has these three opinions. And obviously we're premising, or the Gemara's idea here is that this Rabbi Yehuda explains Rav's position in our Mishnah. So Gemara says, wait a minute, why do you have to say that? Let's explain our Mishnah this way. V'nukma b'mezid, let's say that it was an intentional cooking on Shabbat, v'Rabbi Meir, and it's Rabbi Meir's position. Rabbi Meir says that if you intentionally cook on Shabbat, then you have to wait until Motzei Shabbat, b'kdei shi'asu. And that's what Rav just said in our Mishnah. Rav says someone who does shechita on Shabbat has to wait until Motzei Shabbat to get benefit from it. So that you could fit into Rabbi Meir in a case of mezid. Where it says, lo sakadatcha, that you wouldn't think to say. Diktani dumnia di Yom HaKippurim. We have in the Mishnah a parallel that's drawn between Shabbat and Yom HaKippurim. Ma Yom HaKippurim lo shna bishogeg velo shna b'mezid. By Yom Kippur, it makes no difference whether you're shogeg or mezid. You can't eat it on that day. Why? Because it's Yom Kippur. So you can't eat it at all. So lo achil av hocha. So too over here by Shabbat. Nami lo shna bishogeg lo shna b'mezid. We want to have an opinion where it makes no difference whether the violation was bishogeg unintentionally or b'mezid or intentionally. Lo achil has to be a case where you cannot consume it, cannot eat it. That doesn't work according to Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir only has that position when you do it intentionally. Bishogeg, Rabbi Meir says you can eat it right away. So that means, why is the position of Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda, by Shogeg and Mezid, says that Achirim, others, cannot get benefit from this item until Motzei Shabbat. So that applies both Bishogeg and B'Mezid. Gemara says, Umi Matzit Mukmagla Bishogeg v'Rabbi Yehuda. Can you really explain this mission according to Rabbi Yehuda and Shogeg? So we say, even in a case of Shogeg, where Rabbi Yehuda has the position, you have to wait until Motzei Shabbat, Kadesh Yasub, whether It's the individual himself who did the violation. Whether it's others, they have to wait. So Gemara says, can you really explain our Mishnah based on that? Our Mishnah says that it's a case where he would otherwise have been chayav b'nafsho. He would be chayav mita. Well, you're only chayav mita when you violate Shabbat or Yom Kippur, when you do it intentionally. So how can you say that we're talking about a case of shogeg? By shogeg, one's life not on the line. So hachi kamar. This is the way I explain the Mishnah. Afo pi debemezid mitchayev b'nafsho. It's not telling us or describing to us the situation at hand. Here is a case where he violated a bishogeg unintentionally. So the Mishnah says that even though had he done it intentionally, he would lose his life, nevertheless, the shechita is kasher in this case. So even though b'mezimit chayv b'nefsho, hacha b'shogeg shechita tok kasher. Since over here it's shogeg, his shechita is good. Where it says, v'nukma k'Rabbi Yochanan asandar. So let's explain it like Rabbi Yochanan asandar. Rabbi Yochanan Sandar, Bishogeg, has the position of Rabbi Yehuda b'mezid. Rabbi Yehuda b'mezid differentiates between the individual himself and others. By the individual himself, it's asura ulamit, it's asur forever. Whereas by the others, it's mutar the Motzei Shabbat. So let's say it's a case of Shogeg, according to Rabbi Yochanan Sandar, for others. Adamar loshna b'shogeg, loshna mezid, lo achil. So where it says, Rabbi Yochanan Sandar, kamaflig b'motzei Shabbat l'achirim, v'lo lo. Wait, Rabbi Yochanan Sandar differentiates between the individual violated and others. Tana Didan, our Mishnah over here says, Shchitatok Sheirak, Tani, Lo Shna Lo, Velo Shna Achirim. Such a differentiation does not exist in our Mishnah. And our Mishnah, Stam says, Shchitatok Sheirak. His Shchita is good, whether for himself, whether for others. There's no such distinction that is drawn. According to Rabbi Yochanan Sandar, if you're talking about a case of Shogeg, then there would be such a distinction drawn between the individual himself and others. So since that cannot be the case in our Mishnah, it must be that it's Rabbi Yehuda in a case of Shogeg. Even though, if we explain the Mishnah according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Mezid, he does have such a distinction there. Nevertheless, the Ikar of the Mishnah is written by the case of Shogeg, because we want to make it Dumyo de Yom HaKippurim. Now the Gemara continues, Tani Tana Kameh de Rav Rav. Somebody brought a Mishnah or a bright Tanaic work in front of Rav, and this is what it said in the Tanaic work. Ameh Vashel b'Shabbat b'Shogeg Yochal. Someone who cooks on Shabbat unintentionally can eat it right away. Ben Mezid. When it comes to intentionally violation of Shabbat, then he cannot eat it. Umashtik le Rav. Rav silenced this individual. Well, if you look at the Lashon of the Braita, this is clearly the position of Rabbi Meir. It's identical to the Lashon that's used in the previous mission that we said is Rabbi Meir. So Gemara says, my time umashtik le. So Rav, why did Rav silence this individual who was bringing such a Braita down? Ileim mishum desvir like Rabbi Yehuda. If you say Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda, betana tane de Rabbi Meir, and he's bringing him a Braita that says the position of Rabbi Meir, mishum desvir like Rabbi Yehuda, man detani Rabbi Meir mashtikle. But since he holds like Rabbi Yehuda, does that mean that anybody who brings down a Tanaic work that has the position of Rabbi Meir, we wipe out, we silence them? That's not right, right? You would say halacha ki Rabbi Yehuda, or that Braita is not ki din. Because you would say, that's Rabbi Meir's opinion, not Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, as I paskin like. But we don't just say, wipe out the Braita, because it's someone else's opinion. V'od, and in addition to that, misavar lak Rabbi Yehuda. Does Rav really hold like the position of Rabbi Yehuda? V'amar Rav Chanan, v'ami, ki mori luhu Rav l'talmidei. When Rav used to give a psak halacha, when his talmidim came to him to ask, what's the halacha? Is the halacha like Rabbi Meir or like Rabbi Yehuda? Mori luhu ki Rabbi Meir. He used to paskin like Rabbi Meir. V'chi darish b'pirka. And when he goes ahead and is doresh in public, then he would say Dorish Rabbi Yehuda. He was Dorish Rabbi Yehuda Mishum Ame'aretz. For those that were ignorant, he gave them the halacha like Rabbi Yehuda. He didn't want them making mistakes and saying it was unintentional, intentional. He didn't want to get involved in this. So therefore, he gave a stricter opinion when he darshened in public, even though the Ikar halacha he believed was like Rabbi Meir. So now what are you suggesting here? Why did Rav silence this individual who brought a Braita down like Rabbi Meir? Number one, that's not the proper way to handle a Braita that's authored by someone else. And number two is, Rav really holds like Rabbi Meir. So Gemara says, V'chi teima tano b'pirkei, that was in public, and the Talmidim that were sitting in front of Rav, one of them said over this Braita to Rav while he was darshaning in public. So Gemara says, V'chi tano b'pirkei tana kamei, that's when it happened, ata kuli alma l'tana tzaite. What, the public, the general public that's gathered there, they listen to the students who are learning in front of Rav? That's not what they do, l'amora tzaite. They listen to the, I call them the megaphone. But the Amora was someone who Rav used to whisper into him all the information. The Amora used to speak out loud, or both the possibility that he translated it. If the Tana who was darshaning didn't speak Aramaic, he would also translate into Aramaic. But even if the Tana did speak Aramaic, for the public, he used to raise his voice and speak loudly to the public. So over there, they're listening to the individual who's the megaphone, who's the speaker on behalf of the Tana. They're not listening to the Talmidim in front of him. So why would Rav have to silence this Talmid? So Amar of Nachum Yitzchak, Tana Shochet, Tana Kameh de Rav. That the Tana over here did not say Hamivashel. like we said before in the previous mission that we quoted here, but rather he said the word shochet. What's the difference? Because Tana the Kamei Rava, shochet b'Shabbat b'Shogeg yochal. Someone does shchit on Shabbat can eat it. B'mezid lo yochal. A mezid not. Amrlei. Now this is what Rav responded to him. Madatech. What do you think? Ki Rabbi Meir? He says, you think you're paskin like Rabbi Meir. Rav paskins like Rabbi Meir b'Vashel b'Shabbat. So this student who was sitting in front of Rav also quoted a bright in the name of Rabbi Meir, intending that that should be the halacha as well, but instead of using the word Vashel, cooking on Shabbat, he used shchit on Shabbat. Rav responds to this Talmud and says, wait a minute, I do passing like Rabbi Meir when it comes to Mevashel b'Shabbat, but that doesn't extend to Shechita b'Shabbat. Ad kan lo kashari Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is only matir when it comes to Bishul b'Shabbat. El b'Mevashel. De ro'oi lakus. Since it's edible even before it's cooked, as Rashi points out here, lakus is a terminology used in the Gemara for anything that is eaten in its not normal manner. Something that's in an unusual manner that it's consumed. So over here, if he eats it as beef jerky, eats it as raw meat, that is permissible because you don't need to cook it on Shabbat. Since it was edible without the cooking on Shabbat, when you do cook it, you haven't done anything over here to change, quote-unquote, the status of the item because it was edible before, it's edible now. That's why Rabbi Meir's matir. Aval shochet, when it comes to shchita, dein bay lakus, before shchita, the animal was asur. After shchita, now the animal's mutar. You've changed the status of the animal. Over there, Rabbi Meir would not agree. Lo! So Gemara says, wait a minute. What about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah is a case of the Shochetu. And over there we said, Rama Rav Huna, Dorish Chia Beir Bar Rav, Mishmei the Rav, Asura Bachilu the Yoma, Benisbin Chavayel Meimar, Rabbi Yehuda Hi. That they came to say that the position or the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda. Now if you believe that Rabbi Meir agrees to Rabbi Yehuda by Shchita, he only disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to Bishul, but he agrees with him by Shchita, Ha Rabbi Meir Shari. That means that Rabbi Meir would believe that it's Mutar according to these Chachamim that say the author of our Mishnah has to be, according to Rav's explanation of Mishnah, has to be Rabbi Yehuda. That means, or they imply that Rabbi Meir would be Matir in this case. Gemara says, Kishari Rabbi Meir, Kigon Chayelo Cholib in Belgium. That's when he has a sick person in the house, Miba Ojiom. So now, we have to explain this a little bit better. That is that there are two issues that we are dealing with over here. We are dealing with one issue, which is the Isser Shabbat, and we have a secondary issue, which is Mukta. And they're both playing a part here. We have to look at each situation. When we look at the situation, was there a violation of Shabbat, or was there no violation of Shabbat? That's the number one question we have to ask. The second question we have to ask, is this item Mukta or not Mukta? And Mukta is only a Din Derabbanan. But that Din Derabbanan could cause us problems over here. So what we're suggesting over here is that Rabbi Meir's opinion will actually be impacted by whether the item is muksa or not. And that is, Rabbi Meir believes that if one does shchita or bishul on Shabbat bishogei, there was no maase avira. Since there's no maase avira, you can get benefit from it right away. And we say the person can eat the bishul that was done on Shabbat. Or when it comes to shchita, someone can benefit from that shchita. They could eat it raw at that point in time. They can benefit from the shchita because it was done unintentionally. There is no maase avira. But then there's a secondary consideration. That secondary consideration is muksa. The question is, ben hashmashot, muksa is nikva, is set in place at the time that the sun sets, right after sunset on Friday afternoon, whatever the status of the object is, that status remains throughout the Shabbat. If we're coming into Shabbat, and for instance, the animal is alive, if the animal is alive at that point, one is mikatze midato, a person pushes out of his mind the fact that he would eat such a behema. That behema is not within the realm of items that he would consider on Shabbat and becomes mukse. Then when the person shechs it on Shabbat, true, if he did it bishogeg, there's no maase vira, there's still a problem of mukse. If it's a problem of muksa, you can't consume on Shabbat because then it's a violation of muksa. Fine, you don't have a maase avira, but you do have a problem of muksa. And that's what the Gemara suggests over here, that the differentiation in Rabbi Meir's opinion has to do with what the circumstances are. And that's what the Gemara just answered over here. Kagon, she'elo chole mi bojom. He had a sick individual in the house on Erev Shabbat. If a person has a sick individual in the house on Erev Shabbat, then we say, okay, then maybe it's not muksa anymore. Because since there's somebody sick there, there's a high likelihood that we will need food for this sick person on Shabbat. And therefore, even though the animal is alive when we come into Shabbat, we'd still not make it into muksa. He doesn't push it out of his mind. He doesn't say, okay, this animal's alive, I'm not eating it on Shabbat. He says, wait, maybe for pikuach nefesh, maybe when it comes to a life-threatening issue, we're going to allow you to shech this animal on Shabbat. So if it's a life-threatening issue, there's no longer this idea of muksa because he did have in mind possibly to shech this animal on Shabbat. So that's the differentiation in Rabbi Meir. When it comes to our Mishnah is talking about a case where there was a chola, there was a sick person in the house. And therefore over there, Rabbi Meir says, even shchita, if someone shechs on Shabbat, that will be mutar afterwards. There's no maase avira and there's no muksa. The case that Rav's speaking about where the Talmud spoke up in front of him, that's a case where there was no chola in the house. So true, there's no maase avira. When he does it b'shogeg, he does it unintentionally, there's no Maaseh Avera, but there's still a problem of Muksa because he didn't have in mind for this animal when it comes to Shabbat. That will be the differentiation that we are now making within the position of Rabbi Meir. The Gemara says, Yehochi, my time with Rabbi Yehuda. Then why does Rabbi Yehuda say there's a problem here in our Mishnah? If there's really a chola in the house, why would Rabbi Yehuda say there's any problem here? Number one, you're talking about Muksa that we're done with because the person was sick and he had in mind. Number two, we know that Rabbi Yehuda says even Bishogeg, when you do something unintentionally, there's a Maaseh Avera. But a Maaseh Avera is only when you're not allowed to shecht it on Shabbos. If you have a chol in the house, if someone has pikuach nefesh, then you're permitted to shecht the animal for this individual. If you're permitted, there's no Maaseh Avera. So even according to Rabbi Yehuda, there should be no problem here with the shechita. Number one, you have permission. There is no Maaseh Avera because it's pikuach nefesh. Number two, muksa. There is no muksa because you have in mind for it because there's a chol there. As Amar says, my time with Rabbi Yehuda asar, kugon sheila chol v'hivri. Case here is where a person was sick coming into Shabbos and then he became healthy on Shabbat. So now we have two different issues. Again, let's think about this. With regards to muksa, ben ashmashot, when it comes to ben ashmashot, at that time, the person was sick. So at that time, you still had in mind to possibly shecht the animal, and the isser of muksa disappears. Now, when it comes to the issue of maaseh avera, the person got healthy. When the person got healthy, there's no longer a need to shecht this behemoth for this individual. According to Rabbi Meir, if you do it unintentionally, then there's no maaseh avera. Because Rabbi Meir believes when it comes to shogeg, there's no maaseh avera, and therefore it's permissible to eat right away afterwards. You don't have mukseh, because he was choleh ben ashmashot. Don't have a maaseh avera, because it's shogeg. Therefore, Rabbi Meir says, permissible. And that's the Rabbi Meir that's talking about our Mishnah. Whereas, according to Rabbi Yehuda, no muksa. He agrees with Rabbi Meir. Ben Ashmashot, there was a chole in the house, and therefore the issue of muksa has disappeared. On the other hand, we know Rabbi Yehuda believes that when you do something unintentionally, there's still a maaseh avera over there. And here, this person got healthy, so there's no longer an issue of pikuach nefesh. When he shechts the animal unintentionally, there is a maaseh avera now. When there's a maaseh avera, Rabbi Yehuda believes that it's a sur bo bayom. It's only mutter afterwards, but kadesh yasu after Motzei Shabbat. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda is the author of our Mishnah here about Shechita, whereas Rabbi Meir cannot be the author of our Mishnah. In the other instances where Rabbi Meir would agree to Rabbi Yehuda that you can't eat it until after Shabbos, is not because there's a Maaseh Avera, but because the problem of Muksa. If there is no Chole in the house, if there's no sick person in the house, then fine. Rabbi Meir believes there's no problem of unintentional violation that there's a Maaseh Avera, but there's still a problem of Muksa. And therefore he would agree with Rabbi Yehuda that you have to wait until Motzei Shabbat. That's not the case in our Mishnah, but that's the case in the Braita that was brought before Rav. And that's why Rav told that Talmid that Rabbi Meir only agrees by Bishul, not by the case of Shechita. So now, Tosus points out that there is a machloket in the Gemara about Muksa. In general, everybody agrees that Muksa is determined by the time of Ben Ashmashot, the time right after sunset, that determines something's Muksa. But that's only in a negative connotation, meaning that if something's going to be Muksa, once it becomes Muksa, then it remains Muksa for the whole Shabbos, no matter what happens to that item. On the other hand, when it comes to something that comes in that's Mutter on Shabbos, but its status changes on Shabbos itself and becomes possibly Muksa on Shabbos, there's something that's called Muksa Lechatzi Shabbat, that there's a possibility that halfway through Shabbat, something can become Muksa. So Tosa says that over here, this opinion must be either according to the one who says that there is no such thing as Muksa Lechatzi Shabbat, that you can't become Muksa halfway through Shabbat, and that's why Rabbi Meir says it's still not Muksa, even though he went from being a Chole to a Bari. Once he became healthy, then the animal should become Muksa, because we no longer need it from him. That's one possibility that Tosfos gives. The other possibility that Tosfos gives is that when someone is sick, even when they become healthy, there's a high likelihood that they fall back into their sickness. There'll be some sort of recurrence of the sickness, and therefore, even though he became healthy, people don't take their minds off of it, and it doesn't become muksa. So now the Gemara continues over here. V'chiha, this explanation that we're giving why Rav rejected this Talmud's reading of Rabbi Meir in Shechita is like what we have over here. Chadamar Rav Acha Barad Amar Rav. Like this statement, someone who has a shechita, for someone who is sick on Shabbat, asur levari. Then for someone who is healthy, they may not partake in it. Someone who cooks for a chole on Shabbat, mutar levari. That's mutar for someone who's healthy to partake of it. My time. Well, what's the difference between bishul and shechita? Ha ra'ui lakus. This is the differentiation that we saw in the previous amud. That one is ra'ui lakus. When it comes to raw meat, one can eat it in the raw state. Therefore, the bishul doesn't make a change in the status of the object. It was edible before, and now it's edible now. It's more edible. It's probably more likely to be eaten. But nevertheless, you haven't changed the item. So because of that, when you do cooking for a chol on Shabbat, one, a healthy person can eat from it, because you haven't done anything that the healthy person couldn't have done without the bishul, which is eat the meat. On the other hand, when it comes to ayri roilakus, when it comes to shechita, before the shechita, the animal was inedible. It was asur. On yishech, that you now change the status of the animal that wouldn't have been available to the healthy person otherwise. And it's because you're changing the status of the animal, that's why it becomes asur, because now you have a problem what we call muksa. You have a problem of it, not the masa avira, because it's permissible what you're doing over here. You're doing it for a sick person. Nevertheless, there's a problem of muksa. For a sick person, it's pikuach nefesh. We ignore the problem of muksa. On the other hand, when it comes to a healthy person, then we have to be mitmodeid. We have to deal with the issue of muksa. So when it comes to cooking, the food was edible before. The food is edible now. There's no problem of muksa. Because even when you entered into Shabbos, when the animal was sitting there in raw meat state, it was edible. So it's not muksa. The person doesn't put it out of his mind. And therefore, when he cooks it for the chole, the bari, the healthy person can eat it as well. On the other hand, by shechita, when coming into Shabbos and it comes in and you have shechita, when he came into Shabbos, he had no intention of eating this animal because it wasn't edible. So if that's the case, you put it out of your mind, it's muksa. Then on Shabbos, you have a chola all of a sudden. Person becomes chola on Shabbat, you have to shech for them, that's pikuach nefesh. So we waive the issue of shechita, we waive the issue of muksa, the chola can eat it. When it comes to a healthy person, true, the isser of shechita was waived for the chola, but nevertheless, the isser muksa is not waived for the healthy person, and he has a problem of muksa. And that agrees with this position of Rav that explained before, that he rejected that braita that was brought by the Talmud. Talmud said that Rabbi Meir holds the same thing by shechita and bishul. He says that's not true. Bishul is different than shechita. Now the Gemara continues. Amar Rapapa. Rapapa says this is not a definitive distinction between shechita and bishul. And that is because pamim shashochet mutar. There's a times when shechita is also mutar for the healthy person. When's that? You go and shaylo cholem mi beod yom. That's what we just explained above. If the chole was in the house before Shabbos came in, then even when the animal's alive, the person is not mikatze midato. He doesn't push out of his mind because he thinks there's a high likelihood he's going to need this animal on Shabbat for the sick person. And therefore, it's not mukse, and a healthy person can eat from it. Mivashel, there's sometimes that mivashel is asur. Cooking is asur. We could go and she cuts it low, dalat. Not talking about a case where he's doing shechita, but a case where he cuts off a gourd for the benefit of the chole. When he cuts off for the benefit of the chuleh, you have a problem of muksa now, because the severing or the cutting of the dalat from an attached item, that was muksa. When you came into Shabbos, you had no intention to eat it. You're not going to take it out because it's attached to the tree. Now that you cut it off, you have a problem that it's now muksa and the bari cannot eat from it when you cook it. Now Rashi over here says, kitzetz lo dalat is that you did it from mimina chubar. That you did it from something that's attached. Because Rashi says the word katsatz means something that's detached or severed from something that is attached to the ground, mechuber the karka. On the other hand, if you want to talk about something that's already detached and you want to cut it up, that's called mechatchin. And that explains Rashi's opinion based on what we saw earlier in the Gemara when Rashi talked about mechatchin diluin, cutting up gourds. He said that was talking about a talush. That was talking about a gourd that was already detached and you're slicing up the gourd to make it edible or ra'oi for the behema. Over here where the Gemara uses the term kitzetz, it's talking about cutting it off of the mechubar. So over there, mechatkin diluin was already a gourd that was detached. And over there, the Mishnah is discussing whether that's considered muksa or not. That's machlokes between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Do we worry about muksa or not, Mary Muksa? Are you allowed to chop it up and give it to the animal? And that's one machlok. And the other question is the Torah. The issue of, can you do the extra work to make it edible for the animal on Shabbat? That's the issue of the diluin. Over here, we're talking about kitzetz. He actually cut it from the mechubar. Now, it's permissible because he's doing it for choleh. On the other hand, it's still muksa because it was attached to benesh mashalt. And that would be the problem of muksa for the healthy person. Tosfot, the Rabbeinu Tam disagrees and says the word katsatz can be used even with items that are already severed. And so the Rabbeinu Tam has actually had the opposite opinion now. Back by Mechatkin Deluin, Rabbeinu Tam says that was a case where it was attached. And because he wants to make it dome there to Nevela. Just like Nevela was healthy before Shabbat, meaning that it was totally asur before Shabbat, die on Shabbat now becomes edible. On the other hand, over here, we're talking about a case, kitzetz dalat, was where coming into Shabbat, the dalat was already detached, but it was inedible. It was inedible because it wasn't sliced up yet. Kitzetz means he slices it up and makes it edible now. Again, you have a problem with muksa coming into Shabbat. It wasn't edible at that time. When you cut it up, now you make it edible, or you cook it, now you make it edible. That is only permissible for the choleh, because he doesn't have a problem with muksa, but for the bari, that is not permissible. So it'll turn out that their opinions are opposite. Rashi, by Mechatchin Deluin, says it's talking about a detached gourd. And over here, when it says kitzetz, it's talking about an attached gourd. Whereas Rabbeinu Tam be just the opposite. By Mechatchin Deluin, he says that's a case of an attached gourd. And over here, when it's talking about kitzetz, it's talking about a detached gourd that was inedible. And by cutting it up or slicing it up, that's what makes it edible on Shabbat. And that's why it's muksa coming into Shabbat. So now, just going back, we're going to get to the halacha in 1 second, where the Gemara is going to conclude. But let's understand now. We had a statement that our Mishnah is the position of Rabbi Yehuda, because Rav came along and qualified our Mishnah and says, Shechitato Kshira is only post-Shabbat, only post-Yom HaKippurim can you eat this item. She said, that's in the position of Rabbi Yehuda. That's the position of Rabbi Yehuda, as we explained, that Rabbi Yehuda believes when you violate an Isur B'Shogeg, you have to wait till after Shabbat to benefit from it. Rabbi Meir believes that if you violate B'Shogeg, there's no Masa Avira, you can benefit from right away. Even though Rav said that Rabbi Meir agrees by Shechita, and our case is a case of Shechita. Within that, we differentiated within Rabbi Meir. We said Rabbi Meir only holds that you can eat or benefit from the Melach on Shabbos when it's unintentional, when it's Shogeg, as long as there's no other problem of a Muksa. But if there's a problem of Muksa, then you can't benefit from it on Shabbat itself. We established that our Mishnah here, which says you can get benefit only after Shabbat, and is not Rabbi Meir, that must be a case where we're talking about a Chole. There was a sick person in the house coming into Shabbat, coming into Yom HaKippurim. Therefore, there's no problem of a Muksa. The only problem now we have is a problem of Shogeg. Problem of Shogeg for Rabbi Meir is waived, so Rav can't be speaking in Rabbi Meir's opinion. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's a problem, and that's why Rav is holding like Rabbi Yehuda. On the other hand, when we're talking about the cases over here, where Rav made a differentiation between Shechita and Bishul, and we know Rav paskins like Rabbi Meir. Rav holds like Rabbi Meir that when it comes to Bishul, you can get benefit from it right away on Shabbat. So why doesn't he say the same thing by Shechita? That's a differentiation in Muksa. By Bishul, the item was edible before, is edible now. Raw meat can be eaten, lakus can be eaten, even though that's not the normal way, it's still edible. And when you cook it, it's edible. So you haven't done anything that changed the status of the item from being beforehand out of mind. So something that's in mind now, or in the purview of the individual, that you haven't done. Therefore, according to Rabbi Meir, when you mevashel in Shabbat, no ma'aseh avirah, because it's bishogeg, no muksa, because you couldn't eat it in its raw state. On the other hand, when it comes to Shechita, if you don't have a chol in the house, you don't have someone who's sick in the house, then in that situation, Rabbi Meir is going to say, wait, before Shabbat, you came into Shabbat, you had no intention of eating this animal because it was alive. You couldn't eat it. Now you did Shechita, you brought it into the ability to be eaten, you changed the status, but it was muksa coming into Shabbat. So true, by ma'aseh avirah, the fact that you did it by accident or unintentionally, there's no ma'aseh avirah here to prevent you. But there is muksa that's going to prevent you from eating it. And based on that, we have that distinction within the position of Rabbi Meir. And that'll explain why the Bnei Yeshiva said Rav's position in our Mishnah is only according to Rabbi Yehuda, because over here in our case where you have a chola involved, Rabbi Meir would have been matir, and therefore when Rav says it's asur until Matzah Shabbat, that's only in the position of Rabbi Yehuda. On the other hand, when the Talmid came before Rav and read a braita in Shechita that was like the position of Rabbi Meir, Rav rejected it. Even though in our Mishnah, he said that Rabbi Meir would have said it's mutar over there, the problem by the Tana is that he said a case where there's no chole. There's no sick person. There's no sick person there. We have a problem of muksa that we need to deal with, and Rabbi Meir would be oser in this case. So now the Gemara says, Amrav Dimi Merada, Hochata, what's the halacha? Halacha is like this. Ashochet l'chole b'shabbat. Someone who gives the shechita for a chole on Shabbat, mutar livari. The vari can eat it. Now it has to be here, as Rashi points out, a case where the chole was there prior to Shabbat, that we knew about already. So therefore, this is mutar to shech the animal on Shabbat, because it's pikuach nefesh. So the healthy individual can get benefit from that. There was no Isur Shabbat done. What about muksa? No muksa over here, because the chole was in the house before Shabbat, and therefore the person knew there's a high likelihood he would have to shech such an animal. Ba'umsa. He can eat a ba'umsa, means in its raw state. My time, I came into Iyav Shalik Zayit Basar Balo Shechita. If you want to feed the chole, you have to shech the animal. You can't shech half an animal. You can't shech the portion of an animal. You can't cut off a piece of the animal. For a person who's sick, you have to do a shechita on a whole animal. So since you have to do one shechita, brings the whole animal into a state of heter, whatever you need for the chole you take, a bari can benefit from the remainder because there's no extra malacha that's being done for him, and it's not a problem of muksa. Ki kashachit adaita the chole kashachit. So when you do shechita, you're doing it for the intent of the chole, nothing to do with the healthy person, and therefore the healthy person may benefit from it. There's no maisa avera, there's no maisa shabbat that's being done for the benefit of the healthy person. And number two, there's no problem of muksa. On the other hand, I'm a vashel l'chole b'shabbat. Someone who cooks food for a sick person on Shabbat, asur l'bari, then a bari can't get benefit from that. Now, this goes against what we've seen until now. Until now, we've seen that cooking on Shabbat does not really change the status of the item. Again, here, the bishul is totally mutar, because you're doing it for the purpose of pikuach nefesh, you're taking care of a chole. Problem of muksa, there is no muksa by bishul. We saw that already in Rabbi Meir's position, because it was roi lakus. You could have eaten it in its raw state beforehand, and when you cook it, it's still in an edible state. Before edible state, afterwards, there's no muksa. So why should it be asur? That the Gemara says, gzeiro shema yirbe bishvilo. Problem that we worry about is that if you're cooking for a choleh, we're worried that you're going to start adding in additional items so that the healthy person can benefit from it. So we don't want to allow the healthy person to benefit from the cooking on Shabbos, not because it's asur. If you cook solely for the sick person, in Ochanami, the bari could benefit from it. What we start to worry about is that you cook for the choleh, Then you say, listen, you know, I have five other people here. Let me just throw in some extra stuff and I'll cook it. Over there, then there is an Isur Shabbat being done specifically for the healthy individual, because for the Chole it would have been sufficient to have much less. Now you added more because you want to take care of all these other people. That's a problem. That's a violation of Isur Shabbat, and that we won't permit. And that's the Gzeir over here. The Gzeir is we don't allow you to do it because you might come to violate Shabbat. Not like Shechita, where one action shechts the animal. No matter who you're shechting it for, it doesn't matter if you have the Chole in mind, the Bari in mind. There's only one Maaseh Shechita. By Bishul, the more you put in there, the more you're cooking. There is a greater violation. There's a greater problem. So over there, where there is what's called shiurim, there is a subjective amount that can be placed in there. There's no objective masa, like by shechita, which one objective masa, whoever you do it for. Over here, the masa bishul can be expanded. Since it can be expanded, we don't allow you to do it, or we don't allow the healthy people to get a benefit from it, because we're worried what that might bring to a memorial people might do in those instances. Okay, now we're going to begin the new Mishnah. Mishnah says, Ashuchet b'magal yad. Someone who uses a hand sickle to shech, bitzur, this is a sharp rock, a flint, or bikaneh, or with a reed, shchitato kshira. That shchita is good. As we know, the lashon shchitato kshira means bidiyavet. It's good. Not the chatchilo, that the gemara will do it. Hakol shochatim. Anybody can do shchita. This is something that we've seen before. It's also in the Mishnah and Erechin that the gemara will do it. What does it mean? Anybody can do shchita. Ud olam shochatim. You can shecht anytime. Ubechol shochatim. And you can check with any item except chutz. The exception to this rules are mimagal katzir, with a scythe, with a knife that is used for cutting down in the harvest, vamigera, which we'll call a saw, vashinaim, and with teeth. Teeth here, we're talking about teeth that are still attached to the jaw of an animal, vatziporin, we're talking about a nail that is still attached to the individual's hand. Bipnei shein chunkin. What we're worried about over here is that they do not cut smoothly, but rather they catch on the simanim, and they cause the simanim to be choked, meaning they cause them to be ripped out, and they don't shecht in a smooth manner. The Gemara is going to describe all of this. That's just the Mishnah Bichlal. So the Gemara says, Ashuchet di'evidin l'chatkilo lo. As we know, when you say Ashuchet, it sounds like b'di'evid, it's okay, but that l'chatkilo, you shouldn't do this. Bishlo mo b'magal yad, when we're talking about a hand sickle, I understand that. Dilma atan meva b'idach gisa. Because when it comes to a hand sickle is a, call it a double-edged knife. It's a slightly curved blade. On one side of the blade, it's a smooth knife. On that smooth side of the knife, you could shech with that nice side of the hand sickle, and it wouldn't be a problem at all. The problem is that the other side of the hand sickle actually has points in the blade. They're curved in, they're turned blades to help catch the grains when you're harvesting them. That side is a sur to shech with, because that might catch. So here we're talking about the fact that he's shechting with the smooth side of the blade. In Ochanami, that's a perfect shchita. Why do we suggest you don't do this? Because we're afraid that if we allow him to do it with the smooth side, he might come to do it with the side that also has the teeth in it. If he does it with the side of the teeth, then it is a problem. So that's why the Gemara says, Mishnah says, only b'di'evet. B'di'evet, yes, the chatchilo, no. El etzur v'kaneh l'chatchilo, lo. On the other hand, when it comes to etzur v'kaneh, when it comes to a flint, a sharp stone, or a reed, why not? Viramini. Don't we have a explicit braita that says, b'chol shochatim, you're allowed to shech with anything. Ben bitzur, ben bezchuchit, you can use a flint, you can use glass, ben mikrumit shel kaneh, whether it's the halm of the reed, in the sharp piece of the reed, lo kasha. So Gemara says, that's not a question. Kan betalush, kan bemechubar. Depends what we're using here. Is the rock still attached, or is it detached? Is the reed still attached, or detached? When it's still attached, then we worry about it, then you can't shecht with it. If it's detached, then you can shecht with it. So the braita that we're bringing says you can do it with the chatchila, those are cases where it's detached. In cases where it's attached, over there we say, the chatchila, you shouldn't do it. B'di'evit, if you did do it, then it's okay. Damar Rav Kana, shochet b'mechuber l'karka. When it comes to something that's attached to the ground, Rebbe posel. Rebbe says it's pasul d'gamre. Means both the chatchila, b'di'evit, it's no good. B'chia machshir. B'chia, on the other hand, says it's mutar. But b'chia, does he mean mutar l'gamre, like the chatchila, or does mutar mean even only b'di'evit? So Gemara says, Akan lo machshir Rebbe Chia ela b'di'evit. When Rebbe says machshir, he says only b'di'evit, it's okay. Aval chatchila, lo. But the chatchila not. So that's how we'll explain. Our Mishnah is talking a case where it's mechubar. Mechubar, and it's Rabbi Chiyo is authoring the Mishnah, and that's why it's mutar b'di'evet. The braita that we brought over before that said that it's mutar l'chatchila, that braita is talking a case where it's detached. Everybody agrees where it's detached, it's totally mutar l'chatchila. When it says, b'mayu kimta, so you're explaining our Mishnah, ki Rabbi Chiyo, b'di'evet, it's a case of b'di'evet. Elahad tanya. Then what are you going to do with the braita that says, b'chol shochatim? Ben betalush, ben bemechubar, ben shasakin damala v'tzavar beim adamata, ben shasakin damata v'tzavar beim adamala. So now we have another problem. We have a braita tosefta that says both detached and attached, you can shech, no problem. Whether the sakin is the mala, whether the sakin's above the neck of the animal, and you flip the animal over and you're shechting the animal with the knife on top, whether the animal is on top and the knife's below, that you're using the knife from below and you're cutting upward, either way, all of those are fine. Now, the chashash we'd have there when you're cutting upward is that the weight of the animal would lay on the knife, and that would call drisa. That would cause pushing instead of the back and forth motion. Well, there we say it's all the chatchila fine. But what do you see here? You have a tosefta that says the chatchila one can shecht with mechubar, with attached. Who's the author of that tosefta? Mani. Lo Rabbi. It's clearly not Rabbi. Rabbi believes by attached items that it's possible even b'di'evet. For lo Rabbi Chia. Now, the way you explain Rabbi Chia now is Rabbi Chia says b'di'evet it's okay, but chatchila no. Well, we have a tosefta that says the chatchila yes by mechubar. So, Irabi Chia, Dievid in, Lechatkila Lo. So, who's going to be author of the Tosefta? Irabi, Dievid Nami Lo. And if it's Rabbi, he says even Dievid's no good. So, Gemara says, Olam Rabbi Chia, Vafilu Chatkila. Now, we have to go back now and rethink what we said. When we say Rabbi Chia is Machshir, he says Machshir by Mechubar is Lechatkila. Vahakad Ramiflege Bidievid. So, why did the Breita bring down, why did it bring down a case of Bidievid, which says, Ashochet bin Mechubar Lekarka, Rabbi Posel, Rabbi Chia Machshir. Shana Machshir sounds it's only good Bidievid, not Lechatkila. So why did that Breita speak in a Lashon Bidiyavet? Odiacha kocha de Rabbi. It's come to teach you the power of Rabbi. The power of Rabbi is that Rabbi believes even Bidiyavet, it's no good. Even though generally we say koach de hetera is adif, and therefore we should have emphasized Rabbi Chia's position. That is mater the chatchila. As Tosus points out, we have the other Breita, the Tosefta that we're explaining over here, which will teach us the position of Rabbi Chia. So we don't need this Breita to teach us the position of Rabbi Chia. Vela, if that's the case, we explain the Tosefta now that says Mechubar is the chatchila. That's Rabbi Chia is the author of that position. We can explain the Breita that says b'chol shochatin, that you can shecht with everything. That is a case of mechubar, and that can be Rabbi Chia can be the author of that. But now, who's the author of our Mishnah? V'lo matnita nektania shochet d'yevet in l'chatchila lo. Our Mishnah that says l'chatchila no, but b'd'yevet yes. Who's the author? Mani, lo Rabbi v'lo Rabbi Chia. It can't be Rabbi or Rabbi Chia. E Rabbi Chia, if it's Rabbi Chia, feel the chatchila. Rabbi Chia believes that's even mutu l'chatchila. So why is our Mishnah written in l'shem b'd'yevet? E Rabbi, if the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi d'yevet nami lo. Then even b'di'evit, it should be no good. Because Rabbi believes that ben mechubar, it's no good at all. So Mar says, l'olam, Rabbi Chia. Mar says, l'olam, the position of Rabbi Chia is v'afilu l'chatchila. Rabbi Chia believes that when it's mechubar l'karka, it's mutar and mutar l'chatchila. Umatnit, and who's going to be author of Mishnah? Diktani, hashuchet, Rabbi. It's going to be Rabbi who says that b'di'evit, it's okay. Woo, wait a minute. We have an explicit braita that says Rabbi believes that even b'di'evit, it's not kosher. So kasher the Rabbi, the Rabbi. Now you have a steer in Rabbi's position. You have the Mishnah here, which seems to be Rabbi's position, and he says b'di'evet it's okay. And we have an explicit braita that says Rabbi's posel when it comes to shochet mechubar l'karka, where it says lokasha. There are different types of mechubar l'karka. Kan b'mechubar mi'ikaro. This is something that was always attached, something that grew that way, something that was always embedded and attached to the ground. Kan b'talush l'sof chibaro. The other case of mechubar l'karka is a case where it was already detached and then reattached. That is the distinction that we're going to draw over here. How do I know there is such a distinction drawn between when something is attached to the ground, whether it was always attached, or whether it was detached and then attached again? Detanya, we have a breita. Someone who shecks with a spinning wheel. We're going to see a lot of this tomorrow. Tomorrow's daf, we're going to spend a lot more time on this. But somebody who does with a milling wheel, a wheel that spins around, attaches a knife to it, and he uses that. He spins the wheel to shech the animal. Shkitato ksheira. So over there, the knife is attached, and it is mechubar. Nevertheless, the shkita is good. B'mechubar l'karka, shkita tok sheira. And even if it's mechubar l'karka, shkita is sheira. Na'aitza kim v'kotel v'shachatba. Someone who implants, embeds a knife into the wall, and then shechs with it, that shkita is good. Hayat sur yotzei min hakotel. If you have a rock, a sharp edge of a rock that's protruding from the wall, and the wall over here we're talking about is the wall of a cave, is not a wall that was built by human beings, but an existing bedrock wall, and there's a sharp stone sticking out. O kaneo lemi alav. Or we're talking about a reed that grew up by itself. Now, truthfully, the distinction here about growing by itself is not because if it was planted by Adam, it would make any difference. We're just trying to compare it to the case of the tzur by the kotel. The kaneh is trying to teach us about the wall. The wall here has to be the wall of a cave where it's something that always existed, not the wall of a house that was built by Adam. Not to tell you that something that grows by itself versus being planted by man makes a difference. They're all problematic because they grew up by itself. So shachat bo shchitato psula. In those cases, they're pasul. The Gemara says, kashin adodi. You have a steer over here. In one part of it, we're saying mechubar l'karka is kasher. In the second half of this breita, we're saying that mechubar l'karka is pasul. How do you distinguish between them? Alav shvamina. Shani ben mechubar mikaro l'talush l'sof chibro. All the cases in the first half of the mission are cases where they were detached and then later attached. They're mechubar l'karka, but they were attached by man. Since they were attached by man, shkitatok sheira b'di'evet. That's the position of Rabbi. On the other hand, all the cases in the latter half of the breita and the second breita are cases where they were always this way. It was a rock protruding from the wall of a cave. It was a reed that grew out of the ground, and you're trying to shek with those. Those are psulim because those are mechubar l'karka mi'ikaro. They were always attached to the ground. Those are problematic. Okay, we'll stop over here and we'll continue with the sugya tomorrow.